Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
We're two friends with a shared love of food, cooking, and all things cookbooks.
We are now in the third season of this podcast. And this one is all about, well, not really anything in particular. We are themeless. So you can expect deep dives on certain dishes, reviews of cookbooks, of course, but there'll be new cookbooks, old cookbooks, all sorts of cookbooks. And of course, we'll be asking you, our lovely listeners, for some input on episodes that we're going to do.
It's going to be so fun. And if you love what we do, we're also on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help to cover the podcast's costs, from the books themselves to the ingredients for what we cook. And in return, you'll get some fun stuff like bonus mini-sodes. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now, let's get to the fun part.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Victoria.
How is your summer?
Busy, man. Busy. We're both busy bees, but hence the slightly delayed, not delayed, summer hours, let's call it that.
Summer. Yes, that's a good way to look at it. Summer hours.
But yeah, so far so good. Just, you know, I know I'm encroaching on your territory here, but the weather's been truly shite. So.
Yes, it's a washout summer here in a British house.
Sad girl summer. But
sad girl summer, rainy girl summer. But the world is boiling elsewhere, so I don't know which I would prefer, to be honest.
Yeah.
Talking about the world being on fire. Yeah. The latest Instagram, there's been a few kind of restaurant-y Instagram
beefs, Cote de Boeuf.
Yeah, beef in the past couple of weeks. But the one that just dropped
this shitstorm just in
that we've been texting about, and we were like, we have to talk about this on a podcast, is Thomas Straker, who is a British chef, bit farmy, isn't he?
Did he get famous originally because he just went very viral on Instagram with lots of butter things? I think he did. He was a good content creator anyway, and I followed him and I liked his stuff, and then he did all these series of like different butters, and there was like, and he would put them on different things like chili and honey ones, or I don't know, and then that series went really well, and then he opened this like plate. I think he's just not long open that restaurant. They do a lot of flatbreads and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
With the aforementioned butters.
I mean, they look great. They're like little pizzettas, aren't they? Yeah. Like, with little nice toppings. But he's opening a new place called Straker's.
Right.
And he did the chef team, the brigade team reveal on Instagram this weekend, right?
Yeah. And spoiler, it's not really a reveal.
No. It's like copy and paste him like 8 times. Just all of these white men stood in front of his restaurant, and he's like, chef team assemble.
Entirely white men.
It's that you... all the same height. Yeah, I feel like, why are they all the same height? He couldn't find any women or people of color, but he could find all men the same height.
It's like when you do, like, when you're doing like a boring work presentation or something, and you're trying to, you know, show people, and you do like number of little heads. Yes. That's exactly what it looks like. Some of them wearing baseball hats. They all look very cool. We'll give them that.
But
with their arms crossed,
it's blown up because, rightly so, people have been like, "What the hell?" And this restaurant is like in Kensington, right, in London. So very, like just off the Portobello Road.
Yeah.
So a very wealthy part of London.
Mm-hmm.
But also, West London is an incredibly diverse place. London is an incredibly diverse place. You're telling me that you couldn't find a single woman or person of color to work in your kitchen? Like,
I know.
There's just no chefs. There's no chefs that, I mean, but maybe I understand, based on the responses from him on his post. So people are calling him out, blah, 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 blah. And he responds to say that everyone should, and I quote, calm down.
That's why he doesn't have any women working in his kitchen, because if you tell a woman to calm down, then you immediately get bloody beheaded, and rightly so.
Oh my God. And you can imagine it happening in a kitchen, right? You know, like kitchen culture is so, like, you know, heated, huh? And you know, I bet women get told to calm down all the time. And then he says, he asks everyone, he says, if you're so bothered about it, go and gather the CVs of any chefs you think were missing. And then he just writes, solutions not problems. Okay, we'll solve this for you. Like, you went through a whole hiring process for, like, whatever that is, 8-9 people for your fucking kitchen, and we will do the work to fix that for you, because you want solutions, not problems.
Do you, how much time do you spend CV gathering?
A lot.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like, you know,
CV foraging.
I just feel like white men need to be helped. Sort their lives out. You know, they don't have enough time. It's just frustrating, and it's so telling. And I'm glad that he got called out on it, right? Like, he's definitely, that the internet has done the right thing. And I just said to Hannah before we came on, I was like, have you been back to check it? Because Kenji, you know, my boy Kenji Lopez Al, has like commented on it, and then, you know, said, and then replied to him, the Thomas Schreker, like, I don't know who you were. This just popped up on my feed. I love that.
Until I saw your horrendous take.
It is a horrendous take.
Get off the social. He's done a, like, Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump of, like, delete your account. He says, get off the social media for a week or so. Do some reflection. Talk to people who care about you and who you trust. Be better.
Be better. You should be better, Thomas.
Oh my God, it's so good.
It is also just makes me tired. Like,
yeah, nothing's changed, right? It's just,
because also if you read the comments on that, there's so many men in there being like, well, I don't know what you're complaining about. You know, people are hired on merit. Right.
Yeah, we've
okay.
That one.
That's it, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, that it's how good they are. It's not about the way they look. You know, and I saw someone say, do you go into a Chinese restaurant and complain that there's no women or, you know, ethnic diversity?
Oh, God. It's just very draining. Oh, Vic's just gone to trash him their room.
Yes, I'm furious about it. Do better, everyone. And don't go to Strakers until they sort that out.
Yeah.
And even if they do go, don't go. Like, don't go. It's not worth it. There's plenty of other amazing female run kitchens in London. Go to Asma Khan's restaurant.
Yeah.
For a start. And then go to all the other places that are run by women.
Yeah, it's the thing of like, and just, you know, reading the comments there, it's the thing of like, you've done this, just own it now and admit, you know, that you could do better and a way to do that. Like, it's done. It's fine.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to defend it in a world that's really moved on from that kind of...
Yeah, exactly.
Scene. That's like, that lineup is very like bloody Gordon Ramsay in Boiling Point, which is like about fucking 25 years old at this point.
Yeah.
It's just very,
you know,
exciting.
Everyone's watched The Bear. Everyone thinks they can work in a professional kitchen. I haven't actually finished The Bear yet, but I can't. I keep seeing people making that omelette that you sent to me. Yes. And I haven't seen this bit yet. This is like this boursin omelette with like crisps on top.
Yeah.
And I don't like boursin, obviously, but, you know, it looks very fancy.
Now, I was coming back from Ireland on the plane, and the flight, you know, the pilot, you know, generously told us how we might be stuck on that plane after we had boarded for approximately 6 hours on the runway. Cue like mental breakdown. It turned out to only be two, but the girl beside me or across the aisle had The Bear all preloaded on her phone. And she was watching it, and I was like craning my neck so bad to try and get to see it. I could see the scene with like Olivia Colman. I really have to catch up and watch that.
Yeah, I should as well. It's just very, that first season is very
intense,
stressful.
Yeah.
And I heard that the second season is kind of less so, but you have to make it through. They're only like half an hour episodes, right? But they're very high tension. Yeah. Like,
Yeah.
Anyway. We might do a mini-sode on The Bear when we finally finish it.
Yeah, we'll like be 10 years after everyone else has finished it at the rate we're going. But, you know, from shit men to great ones.
I like it. Great transition.
Thank you. We're here to talk about someone that we've mentioned so many times on this podcast, but never dedicated a whole episode to or looked at any of his books in detail. And that is one Ed Kimmer. Kimmer.
Wait, Ed Kimmer.
Come here and I'll hug you. Ed Kimber, a.k.a. The Boy Who Bakes.
We love him. End of episode.
Do you think he's still going to go by like The Boy Who Bakes when he's like... 72. It sounds like Harry Potter. The Boy Who Lived.
The Boy Who Baked. Yeah, I wonder if he regrets that.
Anyway,
I don't think he needs to regret it. I just noticed that Olivia Potts of Half Baked Idea, who recently bought a new cookbook called Butter, she changed her Instagram handle recently from A Half Baked Idea to just her name, and I was like, oh, that's a very common thing.
It's the equivalent of like your crappy teenage email address that you don't want to stand by, you know, mine banani88@hotmail.com.
Mine was Little Pink Flower.
Why were you a little pink flower?
What do you mean?
I'm sorry.
What do you mean? Why?
You are my little pink flower. Ed Kimber, shall I tell you a little bit about him before we get into the boot
yes,
that we're
please.
Going to talk about? So, did you know, I'm sure you did, that Ed was the inaugural winner of the Great British Bake Off? So he won the very
I did know
one.
That, but I feel like a lot of people don't know that.
Well, now you do, non-knowers. And he has six... best-selling cookbooks. So the first was The Boy Who Bakes, then there was Say It With Cake and Patisserie Made Simple, which I didn't know about really before. I hadn't seen them. And then this kind of like great one that we've talked about loads, I know we're going to talk about more today, called One Tin Bakes. That was 2020. Then One Tin Bakes Easy, which Vic has as well. And now his most recent one is Small Batch Bakes, which I'm going to talk about, and which is really exciting because it's just a great idea. Like, you know, especially One Tin Bakes makes a lot. The one tin that it's based off is a generous serving, right? So like it was,
oh my God, it's huge.
Blade massive. So he's got loads of, you know, acclaim from like Nigella and people like that. He worked in the corporate world, you know, like the rest of us. He studied politics at university, realized the corporate world wasn't for him. And then he entered the Bake Off. And when he won, he just kind of followed that train. And he does loads of freelance writing for loads of magazines. All the food ones you can think of, like BBC Good Food, Olive Delicious, Washington Post, Guardian. He's on TV loads. He has a Substack, which looks really good. I'm always tempted to follow, and I have not signed up to that. But some of the recipes that he posts about on that are look amazing on his Instagram.
Yeah, he does a lot of like paid partnerships as well, doesn't he, on his blog?
Yes.
With nice recipes.
But good ones. You know, sometimes you see bakers do really random ones. Who did I see? Oh, yeah. An unnamed Bake Off person recently did one with like a hair or like it was like Garnier about keeping their hair, you know, they're busy bakers that need to keep their hair looking great at the same time.
That's a stretch, isn't it? That's a stretch. My God.
So I think that Ed Kimber always does really good ones. He used to have a podcast called Stir the Pot, which I don't think he does anymore, but it had really good guests like David Leibovitz and Otto Lengi and so on. He lives in London with his partner and his dog Wesley that appears on his Instagram a lot. And apart from that, there's not much not much juice or goss online about him. I feel like he's, you know, he just gets his head down and he gets the baking done, does our Ed. That's what we've always said about him. He's just a good...
A good Ed. He's got a good Ed on him. That one.
I just really like him. If anyone ever asked me for, like, when I did started baking sourdough, he was the person that I went to because he does like these great step-by-step guides on his website. He's got a lot of like free content out there as well that's just really good recipes as well as the book. So I think we've said it before, but you know, if you don't follow him, give him a follow because
he's also absolute interior design goals. Like some of his interiors, he's like bought a house or a flat. He moved to Walthamstow, I think. And he's like done it all. They've done it all themselves, him and his partner. And honestly, like a lot of that stuff is like saved on my phone. I was like, oh, we should do that. We should do that. It's kind of an older building, so a lot of it doesn't fit with this. I live in a new build house, but yeah, it's he's great. He's just got an eye. He's got an eye for it.
Well, they all do. Like, right, you know, Ravneet's house looks bloody great as well. Oh, I just want this life of this, you know, freelance. They work bloody hard, don't get me wrong, but it looks nice. They look like nice lives. I forgot to mention that he apparently regularly teaches at Leeds School of Food and Wine as well, which is
lovely.
I'll talk a little bit more about the background to the Small Batch Bakes book as well, which he's done a few interviews on, but when we talk about that. But so we're gonna start talking about the first book that we both have, which is
One Tin Bakes. Woohoo.
So the premise of this is that you have one size tin.
A 9 by 13,
which I think I admitted in the podcast previously I bought and somehow managed to buy the wrong size. And then for a birthday gift, my lovely work colleague who listens to the podcast got me the right size tin. And since then, haven't stopped baking from this book. 9 by 13 was all I needed to get me going. Which is just a genius concept for a book when we all have, or at least my cupboard is like stacked with various tins that love to fall out at every opportunity. You just need one, and it's like a complete range of recipes. There's like cakes, there's cookies and things like that, there's pastries, no bakes, breads. It's very diverse. More diverse than a Thomas Straker chef lineup.
More diverse in the first like 2 pages than that. Jesus. Yes, it's a joy, isn't it, to read. Yeah, I feel like this maybe, I don't know Ed, obviously, but I if this was me, if my career looked like his, I feel like this would be my baby, this book particularly. It feels like he's really gone in on it. Like it's no holds barred. Some of it is like tough, like some of it's like hard work. There's like a brioche dough in there that goes into various things. Yeah. There's, you know, it's multi-step stuff. It's all using the pan eventually, but you know it's not like a quick and easy book.
No.
But there's something for like every time of year. And I feel like just also some of the flavor combinations are so unique, and like it's not just like your standard like, oh, there's a chocolate cake and there's a Victoria sponge and like, oh, there's, you know, pineapple. I don't know, there's just, it's just different.
Yeah, there's this passion fruit and lime Tres Leches case study that I wanted to pursue in further detail. And cake that I've wanted to make for ages and haven't, but I think that sounds great.
Yes, there's like a whiskey and rye cherry like pie. It feels very like, he's just, like, all the things he loves, you know, there's like a, you know, fake kind of Pop-Tart recipe in here, which frankly looks great. There's a lot of like American inspired like desserts, cobbler. Ugh, it's just great.
Cobbler. Another thing I've wanted to make for ages as well, I haven't got around to it, is the olive oil cherry snack cake.
Yes.
That looks bloody great as well. Upside down banana buckwheat cake. Ugh.
Ugh. It's great.
Genius on genius. What is a buckle?
Cobbler?
Oh, it's a cake laced with fruit and topped with streusel.
Oh, so yeah, like a crumble but with a streusel topping. The matcha roll cake looks amazing. Like it's not my, oh no, not the matcha roll, that looks great, but the roasted plum roll cake. It's like he like
rolls
it and then put like turns it on its side so that when you cut into it, it looks like the rolls are like vertical. Like, it looks amazing.
Ashlenghi has one like that in sweet. I think he calls it a zebra cake or something. But they look so impressive when they're cut.
Yeah,
I've often talked about the carrot cake from this with the brown butter cream cheese frosting, which for me was a total game changer and is like now the only carrot cake recipe that I use. He does include chocolate in that or chocolate chips, and I generally don't. But even without, it's amazing. And that was like the base of the wedding cake that I did last year.
I've also made that, and it is, and I made it into like cupcakes for my son's nursery. And it was so good. And it's just so, it's such a giant recipe. Like I was going to make two lots of that carrot cake for when I made that. And I made one. I was like, there's so much cake. Like, that's another good thing. Like, if you're going to a party or, I don't know, it's good for sharing, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of this is great for transporting. Yes. I know that sounds really silly, but, like, I always struggle with how to transport stuff if you're going to, like, a garden party or whatever. And because it's all in the one tin, generally you can like leave it in there while you and bring it and then just slice it up when you get to wherever. Some of it is a little bit like there's finger buns and stuff that you do in here that isn't the shape of the tray essentially. But it's just there's a lot of party pleasers and I've made loads from it for like different birthdays and stuff like that, and it's kind of varying levels of complication.
Like my life. I've not cooked that much from it, which is why I was excited to have this opportunity to do it, because I admire it a lot, but a lot of the time I see things in it and I'm like, oh, that's gonna take longer than I have. So I was excited to be able to, like, you know, spend some actual time with some of these things. I didn't make them, great. But I am
absolutely desperate to make the espresso cacao nib morning buns, which he says are a ode to the tartine ones, which are made with croissant dough. Like, you have to make the croissant dough.
Right.
But he makes his with brioche dough. So it's a... It's a slightly less involved process, but you still need like overnight. But I just know that I'd love them. So I need
they
to make
sound amazing.
Make time. Because I love that tartine cookbook, which we should talk about sometime.
We should also do that. Yeah. So I haven't made anything from this one for this episode. But like I said, I've made the carrot cake loads of times. I made the tahini chocolate chip cookie bars before as well, which are good. Just a really, probably one of the more straightforward recipes in the book, in that it's just a kind of cookie dough that's pressed into the tin. But the tahini adds, obviously it's tahini, and I will include it on everything. Mm. It adds like a really nice dimension. I made also the milk chocolate sheet, caramel sheet cake, I think, before, which I don't love chocolate cake. I think I've said that many times. But this one, the icing on it is just insanely delicious. So it's a milk chocolate salted caramel ganache that you spread on top. You do that first because you need to chill it, but yeah, you make like basically a salted caramel, and then you pour that caramel over chocolate so that it melts the chocolate, and then you stir it until it makes like a ganache, and it is so delicious. And then you make the chocolate sheet cake, which is pretty straightforward, but you scatter over salted peanuts on top of the cake.
That sounds great. Oh,
it's absolutely delicious. I've also made the raspberry cheesecake squares, which, or maybe they're streusel squares, and I made those for you. Do you remember you, me, our friends Becca and Paula went to Kew Gardens a couple of years ago during lockdown, and I had just got this book, and I polled you guys on which of the recipes you would like me to make, and the raspberry cheesecake streusel squares came out on top, and they were delicious. They're exactly, like a cheesecakey base, raspberry cheesecake kind of topping, and then, you know, a kind of nice crumbly streusel on top.
Yeah, they were great.
Delicious. I'm sure there's more that I've made as well, but it's just, and so much more that I want to. It's one of those few books that I would probably happily make like 90% of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not interested in most of the like desserty stuff because it's very like custardy and, you know, creamy and stuff, but the rest of it, absolutely. Should I tell you what I made for the app?
Yes, please.
In these. So I made two things from this because I was excited to, you know, get stuck in. I had so many bookmarks though for what I wanted to do, and I wasn't sure. But anyway, so the first thing I made was the roasted white chocolate oatmeal raisin cookie bars.
Ooh, how are they?
They were fun. It was a really like, yeah, it was fun. It was different. It's obviously something I've never done before. So it's essentially like an oatmeal raisin, like kind of cookie, oaty bar base, which is very kind of simple. Simple. It's just butter, flour, rolled oats, salt, golden syrup. Doesn't he love golden syrup? Like, it's in so much stuff. Light brown sugar, milk powder, which I didn't have, so I just used milk, bicarbonate of soda, and raisins that have been soaked. And you basically just, you melt the butter, the sugar and the golden syrup together and pour it over the rest of the ingredients, and then like pack it in to the thing and then bake it. But which is, and that's delicious on its own. You wouldn't need to do the topping if you like that kind of thing. That's delicious. But then the pièce de résistance is the roasted white chocolate ganache for the top. So you get 370 grams of white chocolate roughly chopped, and you roast it in the oven to melt it. So you put it on your, you put it in your pan, and you kind of, so bake it for 60 to 90 minutes, stirring vigorously every 15 minutes.
That's so long.
Yeah, it's at 120 degrees, so quite low.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, you mix it so it goes into like a goldeny color. And yeah, then you kind of put it in a bowl and heat it. So this is like a it's quite a process, and I feel like I didn't have the best white chocolate for it because mine right. didn't really fully like melt like in like a creamy, like, you know, like you imagine chocolate melting. It does go grainy, and he does say get white chocolate with at least 30% cocoa butter, but that's really hard to find, as in like the that has the cocoa butter on it.
And 370 grams or whatever is so much of it, right?
That's
quite, I'm sure it'd be quite expensive if you were to get really good quality.
But it melted, it roasted, like the smell was beautiful. I love that like caramac like start, like taste anyway. So I roasted it, and it didn't, I did all the things, but it didn't quite melt the way that he said, which was a shame. But so once it's kind of cooled for a bit, you add it to a, like a bain-marie with heavy cream, 150 mils of heavy cream. But what right. I did was, is I put all the chocolate in the bain-marie first and just gave that a little, like use that to like melt it a bit better. So it was a bit more melty, and then added the cream. So it was more liquid. And then after your, you know, your thing is baked, you're supposed to do the, you do the white chocolate first, and then clean the pan because it's one pan, or clean the pan and then bake the oats, and then you just pour the ganache over the top once and then sprinkle it. No, then you put it in the fridge for a bit, and after about an hour or so, you sprinkle it with salt and put it back in the fridge. So it's got that, you know, it's got that salty
stomach. Which he just knows how to do that so well, that balance of salt and sweet.
Yeah. They were great. Very, very sweet. Incredibly sweet. Because you've got, obviously, like, you've got in the base, you've got like sugar, you've got milk powder, if you use it, you've got the golden syrup, like it's, and the raisins. So very sweet. And then obviously, white chocolate is already super sweet. And then you're like roasting it. But anyway, really, the taste, that ganache is so nice. Like you could put that on like anything.
Your body.
Yes. Yes. And you should. you could put that, you could like drizzle, you could have it as a drizzle instead if you did like less. But yeah, it was great. He does say to cut it into very like small bars, which I think is what it needs. You've just got loads. Like it's just so big. But yeah, loved it. I loved making that little ganache. I felt so chefy.
Like a ganache is one of those things that sounds really intimidating, right? But actually in practice it's just about like melting chocolate with some warm cream. But it's so impressive. And then I think he's done recipes where he'll like whip up the ganache as well. So it looks like really great. Oh, he's just very smart.
He's very smart, and he's just he's an innovator. So that was that. That was very good. Liked it. And then the second thing I made was the laminated nectarine and raspberry buckwheat scones.
Ooh, how fun.
Yeah.
I like your choices here. They're good. Thanks. They're very, like, unique.
Summery. I love a nectarine.
Me too. And nectarines love you.
Thank you. You know, I was eating a nectarine the other day, and I offered Stephen some, my husband, and he thought it was an apple because I had it like cut up, it kind of like an apple. And I was like, oh, it's a nectarine, not an apple. And he was like, oh, and like put it down. And I was like, what? I was like, try it. And he tried it, and he was like, it just tastes like dirty water to me.
Oh, my God. I was like, Stephen. Good Lord. When are the divorce papers coming?
Next week.
I'm marrying Ed Kimber.
You know. Anyway, so these are fun. So they're not laminated in the, they're just kind of folded. Like the filling is like folded into the scone thing. So you like, so basically you make a scone dough with 230 grams of plain flour, 180 grams of buckwheat flour, baking powder, only 50 grams of sugar. So you're getting the sweetness from the fruit.
From the dirty water fruit.
From the dirty water fruit. Salt, unsalted butter, sour cream, 3 eggs, vanilla extract. So you kind of make the scone as you would, like kind of you rub the butter into the flours,
mm-hmm.
add it all together, blah, blah, blah. And then you roll it out into a rectangle and then you fold it up like you would be, you would start to laminate. And then you put it in the fridge to chill.
Gotcha.
Just chill. Just calm down, dough.
Just calm down. You're all white, okay.
You're all white. No, it's got the buckwheat in it, so it makes it it's a dough of colour. And then you get it out after like 20 minutes and then you roll it into a square and you're supposed to then put like raspberry jam.
Okay.
But I misread it and bought actual raspberries. So I just crushed up some raspberries and added some like sugar.
Nice, yeah.
Which actually made it really lovely. And spread that out. And then you kind of sprinkle the nectarines, the chopped nectarines on top. And then you fold it up again like a letter into thirds.
Oh, wow. Smart.
And then so it's like it's folded in there. And then you cut it into three squares and those into triangles. And then that's your – and then you bake it. You brush it with an egg and demerara sugar. And just put them in the oven for 20 to 25 minutes. And they were great. They're massive. They come out really... You're only getting 6 scones out of that giant recipe.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that is... Yeah.
So they're really big. Boys. But maybe it wouldn't work with a smaller one because you want enough nectarine in there in each one.
Yeah.
And they, kind of folded it. It's really nice. It would be lovely with, some yogurt or creme fraiche or something. And he says to eat them, like, warm out the oven or gently warm them. And that's what I did, kind of serve them gently warmed.
With a dollop of creme fraiche.
Yes, exactly. And they were so nice. They were so, like, not too sweet. And, like, the raspberry, you know, had that, like, obviously had that, like, tang. And then the nectarines, you know, taste that, like, that beautiful dirty water essence in them. it just worked. But also you could make this with anything, like you know, whatever time of year it is, use whatever fruit you want, I think, to do with this.
They sound very much inspired by the kind of American biscuit shape kind of flakiness.
It reminds me of those Alison Roman ones, which I failed at in the you know, kind of, they kind of don't look uniform. You know, a lot of scones are like, you cut them out with a cookie cutter or whatever. But thought they were great. Ooh. And I thought you could use all sorts of things. I was thinking about making them again, actually, because we inherited a plum tree in our garden when we moved. And it's got so much fruit on it this year. And I've got to go and, you know, harvest the plums.
Oh, my God. And I was like, what did you... Am I co-hosting with, like, the bloody barefoot contessa or whatever?
Yes. Making...
We inherited a plum tree. And I'm off to harvest the plums.
Making plum gin for my dinner party this weekend. I'm just into slow living now.
Right, yeah, cool.
I might... I feel like I should make something out of them, so that this could be the one. But loved it. And there's so much I would have made if I, you know, had the time. The whiskey and rye peach cake looks great. Here's what I'll let you know what else I had bookmarked. I had the Anzac cookies. Love an Anzac. Oh, they're Anzac caramel chocolate slices. So it's like a millionaire shortbread, but the base is an Anzac cookie. And that's for our non-Antipodean listeners, that is like a oat biscuit, right?
Slapjacky kind of vibe, but in a cookie kind of.
Oh, I love them. What else did I have bookmarked?
I have the grapefruit meringue pie bookmarked because I think that would be great.
Yes. Is this one... Is the grapefruit poppy seed cake? I think that might be in One Tim Pakes Easy. Yes, it is. The raspberry cream, you know, talking about Antipodean food, I love Lamingtons as well. And he has a Lamington, raspberry cream Lamington recipe, which was on my list as well. Like actual, like real squares, which which I thought I'd probably fuck it up really bad, but no, Lava Lamington.
Oh, I forgot to mention that I made the Janduja. I never know how to say this word. Janduja? Janduja?
Oh, that fancy chocolate.
Sorry, please hold. It's like hazelnutty, isn't it? Oh, my Lord above. You know what I'm trying to say. Blondies, the blondies with them. And they're really good. You make them with hazelnut butter. And then you scatter, like, ooh, milk chocolate and hazelnuts on top.
Do you have to make your own hazelnut butter? No, you just buy it.
Yeah, you just buy it. He says it can be hard to get, but you can use almond butter instead. I think I use hazelnut butter. But, yeah, that was another good one.
Can I just say that I've gone off hazelnuts since my experience with hazelnut chicken for, oh, my God, what was the book?
Oh, my God, what was that? Was it a French one?
The big...
La Rousse.
Every time I think of it,
La Rousse is on fire.
Hazelnut chicken.
I don't blame you. That was bleak. That was the things we've done for this show, man.
What was wrong with me? Well, I was also like pregnant as well. No, that I just it just was. No,
that's no one.
Anyways, so that's Wanting Bakes.
That's Wanting Bakes.
Great. It's absolutely worth. I mean, obviously, you've just Hannah's cooked most of it. She could have written it.
I wish.
It's great. And then, so off the back of that, I think that people probably said to at the boy who bakes, Ed Kimber, that he, you know, some of those were a bit tricky, a bit involved.
Yeah.
Maybe not what they're expecting from like a one tin cookbook or, you know, things. So he brought out One Tin Bakes Easy, which is exactly the same vibe. So you can still use your 9x13 tin, but it's just a bit easier.
Yeah.
Very, some of them are incredibly easy. Similar chapters, so one bowl and all-in-one cakes, bars and cookies, 5-ingredient bakes.
Oh, wow.
No bake treats, desserts, etc.
I don't have this one, as you know, but I'm really very tempted to buy it. So
yeah,
that whether I do or not depends on the next few minutes of your chat.
Oh my goodness! I think this book is worth its weight in gold. It's one of my favorite books. I've cooked loads from it. The peanut butter bars are a hit. Mm. They're literally just peanut butter and oats and probably golden syrup. He's got blueberry lemonade scones, which you make literally with like a can of Sprite.
Shush, that's so fun.
Here's a picture of them. They look great. I've made those.
Oh, they do.
There's more. There's a lot of tahini in here.
Sold. Okay, I'm buying it.
Brown sugar, brown sugar, ricotta, and olive oil cake. Oh, it's just it's so good, and it's all very simple. But what I'm going to talk about today is a recipe that Hannah and I both love, because sometimes Hannah will text me and be like, oh, can you send me the this recipe from this book? And it's often this book. Or also, I think we haven't said this, there is so much gluten-free and vegan recipes in these books.
Yes, or, that's so true.
Options to make it vegan or gluten-free. Yeah. And so whenever we have to bake for a vegan or someone who's gluten-free, I feel like this is our go-to. But
yes,
the recipe I'm going to talk about is worth the price of admission alone. If you buy this book, I think you will make this recipe 1,000 times. I just want these in my house constantly.
Yeah.
I've probably made them about 10 times at this point. Like, I love them. They're impressive. They are the brown sugar tahini scotcheroos. And the way I would describe them,
tattooed on my body.
Yes, me too.
Those four words. You know,
never mind a cabbage. Let's get a scotcheroo. And the way I describe, so when I made these for the book, for the episode, I gave them out to various neighbors and stuff because we were going away that weekend. And, you know, anyway, and I was like, they're great. They're like a adult Rice Krispie cake.
Yes.
You know,
that's exactly it.
And oh my God, they're so good. And they're so easy. So there's no cooking involved. There's no baking involved.
Yeah.
It literally just, so you get 245 grams of tahini, 325 grams of golden syrup, corn syrup or honey, 220 grams of light brown sugar. And yes, I know that sounds incredibly sweet. So you kind of put that all in a pan and you mix it together. I would say, here's my tip if you make these, don't use honey. I feel like honey has too much of a strong taste and you want that like tahini taste to come through. And I feel like honey can be very, you know, has its own special taste. And then, so you basically melt all that down over a saucepan until it's all together. And then for your workout for the day, what you do, pour that over 200 grams of Rice Krispies, puff rice cereal, and then you have to mix it like as quick as possible before it cools down to like have it all mixed. And that's way harder than it seems.
Yeah, you think you're done and then you find this little pocket of like uncoated Rice Krispies and you're like, god damn, and you're like, gotta keep going. It's because the quantity is quite big as well. It's just it's a big workout, but it's worth it. Stay with it.
So worth it. And then you've got your 9x13 pound. You just basically press your those Rice Krispies covered in that lovely sauce into your pan in like an even layer. Wet your hands and do it. That's my tip. If you don't, if it's all sticking to your spoon, because it is like sticky. And then you melt some chocolate, 300 grams of chocolate, just however you want to melt it, microwave, whatever. And you just pour that over the top.
Sit on it.
Yeah, that's it. Leave it out in the heat if you've got some. You just put that over the top, and then you can, if you want to, you can sprinkle with sesame seeds, and I do. And then
it looks pretty.
Yeah, and then you just put them in the fridge for like, wait. Sorry, I've missed a step. Uh-oh. You put your Rice Krispies in the fridge to set before you put the chocolate on for like an hour.
I think it's necessary, but also usually in from experience, mine is like cooled quite a lot by the time you've even put it in the tray, so it's like fairly easy to work with. If you're short on time, you might need a full hour.
Yeah, or you just put it in the freezer even for a couple of for 10 minutes or so, and then you pour the chocolate over and then put it back in the fridge until that's set. And then you can cut them up. And they are the best thing in the world. They're maybe my favorite sweet treat that I could make. They are so addictive.
Yeah.
And everyone will love them. As long as they're not allergic to sesames. They're just buy them. Just make them. Buy this book and make them.
They are fantastic. I've put, there's no butter in them, is there?
No.
No, because I remember thinking for... you could probably make them vegan easily too if you use like a vegan dark chocolate or something.
Yes, literally he has a note. He says, make the Scotch roux vegan, replace the milk chocolate with dark chocolate or use a vegan product. And then he said, because it's supposed to be gluten-free. He says, be sure to use puffed rice that is made without malt extract. Most supermarket owned brands are made without and therefore gluten-free, but that's just something to check. They're so good. I wish I could eat one right now.
They're so good because they're really Moorish. They're really crunchy and like it's like a decent bite, right? They're easy to make and they're quick, but they have like certain depth of flavor from the brown sugar and the tahini.
Yes.
You don't need to put your oven on. I've made them a few times now. I made them for some neighbors when they moved in. And they just seem impressive, but they're not. Not really high stakes.
And you'd think they would be really sweet because of all the sugar and the golden syrup. But they're not.
No.
There's something, the tahini takes it away. I could eat 1,000 of them.
I probably have eaten about 1,000 of them because whatever I make them, I'll leave like a couple of behind for myself at home. And then they just don't last very long. They're not something I get sick of easily either.
I like mine straight from the fridge.
Yes, they're good cold.
Yeah, nice cold. Because then the chocolate stays kind of...
Hats off to Ed Kimber for the Scotch.
Honestly, that's what I mean. Like, you know, the rest of this book's great, but you could just make those, and it's worth, like I said, the price of admission.
Yeah, because that, actually that recipe isn't online. I've looked before. Mm.
He has a sesame milk chocolate shortbread, which I absolutely would make. Just sesame fans, as we all know. frosted oatmeal cream bars. He has an everything but the kitchen sink cookie in this, which is basically whatever you've got left over. It's like a compost cookie. And he's like, I'm giving you ideas of what you could put in here. And he's got like pretzels and crisps and all this stuff. But just whatever you've got, you can make it. I've made the Samoa bars as well, which are like, they're his take on like that Girl Scout cookie. It's like a coconut and chocolate and oaty bar. Great. Really also want to make, he's got blueberry sour cream bars, which is like a sandwich bar. It's like oats, like an oaty thing either side, and then in the middle it's like sour cream and blueberries. Yeah it's great. Buy it. That's all I've got to say about that.
Yes, that I do think I'm gonna buy that book. It sounds really great. The last book that we're going to talk about is one that I baked from, and it's his most recent one, called Small Batch Bakes, which he said that he's just had the complaint from a lot of people that they love to bake but they live on the road, or they just have them and their kids, and you know, it kind of came about during lockdown that people weren't able to share things as much as before, so he and his partner were kind of doing like a lot of smaller recipes, and so he really wanted to make like baking as relevant to most people's lives as possible, which I just think is really nice. So it's meant to be more of a kind of a daily cookbook. I bought the Kindle version because I was going home to Ireland and I wanted to bake from it there, and I didn't want to lug a book. Thank you, Ryanair. But it was such a bargain on Kindle as well. I think it was like less than £1. So, you know, if that is how you like to buy your cookbooks, I would really recommend this one. But it turns out that my sister's oven was bloody broken anyway, so I couldn't even bake while I was there. God, what? My rider obviously didn't arrive on time. I don't go anywhere unless there's an operating oven.
And a 9x13 pan. Not that that book needs it, but you know.
No. I'm such an old person. I don't know how to work Kindle a lot of the time. Anyway, it's on my phone, but this is broken up into like freezing, basics, equipment. Then he's got like a section for leftover eggs, pastry, cookies, bars and treats, cakes, desserts, bread and buns, small batch basics. But the freezing part is interesting because he just said that most of the recipes in it can be frozen really well. The cakes can be frozen for up to a month. Freeze your buttercream separately, and he just gives you little tips on what to do, which I just think is great. And then he kind of gives you some equipment and stuff that you should have. And then I love the leftover eggs recipe section is great. And it's just like the following recipes use egg yolks or egg whites, so that if you have any leftover, just go straight to these recipes, which is great. You've got like lime coconut macaroons and one egg pistachio and raspberry meringue cookies, a little one egg pavlova for two people.
That is so cute. Great. And also sounds great.
Yeah, caramelized banana pudding if you've got two egg yolks. If you've got, yeah, just what a man. So, like, just some of this is just great. Like an individual tart tatin. I was very tempted, and I think I sent you the screenshot to make, but I also felt like it was very classic me, the feta and za'atar burekas, are like, you know, closely related to the Turkish burek, like these Israeli-inspired burekas. And you make a flaky pastry. The filling is just cream cheese, feta cheese, za'atar. And then he recommends that when you bake them, you cut them open and then you make them into like a ceviche, like we made before. Yeah. So like with boiled egg, pickled tomato, tahini, zug, whatever. And it makes like a pastry sandwich. Oh my God. Absolutely. Yes, please. All day long. I made two things from this. Also, it's worth mentioning that he has a recipe called the Emergency Chocolate Chip Cookie, and it makes one cookie, which I just really love. A tablespoon of butter, a tablespoon of sugar, a tablespoon of caster sugar, little milk, flour, baking powder, and 2 tablespoons of chocolate, dark chocolate, and then you just make
that it. Is great.
Yeah, I think I might have to do that. Yes, I made 2 things. The first one was the blueberry hazelnut chicken. No, blueberry hazelnut.
I was really listening. That really got me. Good one.
Blueberry hazelnut ricotta snack cake.
Ooh.
And I just love anything with ricotta. And when I worked in that restaurant that I've mentioned a couple of times, that it was short-lived, that one of my jobs was always to make this blueberry hazelnut, I think it was a ricotta cake. So I was just kind of imagining that it might be like this. He uses rye flour, and he says it's a secret weapon in baking. And it kind of, the ricotta highlights the rye flavour. So it's really, really easy. It's 4 to 6 servings. So you use a normal 9 by 5 inch loaf tin, and yeah, it's the both things that I made from this were really, really quick. So you basically mix flours together, plain flour and wholemeal rye flour, which is really expensive. It's like $3.80 a bag or something. Anyway, Cosy lives, yeah.
Cosy lives.
You mix that with baking powder, bicarbonate soda, salt, and sugar.
Baking powder.
Did I say Vicky? Oh, do the hicky Vicky. And then in another bowl, you whisk together ricotta and an egg, and you add this mixture to the flour bowl. This was quite like tough. He says to stir gently until a smooth batter forms, but it did feel quite like there was more dry than wet, but it kind of came together then. And then you scrape that into your tin, your loaf tin. You sprinkle the top of that with hazelnuts and blueberries and a little demerara sugar. And you bake it for about 35 minutes. I wasn't fully sold on this, I'm not going to lie. But I'm not discounting it because of that. Because everything else he's done that I've made is amazing. So I think maybe I did something wrong. But the batter is quite like stiff, like I said, and like spreading it in the tin was like a little tricky. And then when it was quite a like chewy crumb. It was quite like I'd over mixed it, which right. Maybe I did. Maybe in trying to bring it all together, I did over mix it. But the blueberry and hazelnuts on top, like, were lovely, and there was the right kind of proportions of everything. It was just that batter itself I didn't like. Adore, but he says that you can freeze the slices up to a month as well. So all throughout the book there's just like all these little tips on like not wasting and how to kind of like prolong the life of whatever you make. So that was that one. I wasn't hugely mad about that. But the second thing that I made were the spiced cheddar cornbread muffins.
Ooh. Oh, this book sounds great, because my one request of Ed Kimber is that he makes a One Tin Bakes savory, because there's no savory stuff in the One Tin Bakes. But you've mentioned a few things from this book that are savory things.
This whole section, he's got overnight croque madame waffles, which is great.
What?
He does smash burgers, which is weird. Sage and onion buttermilk biscuits. Cacio e pepe, I can never say that right. Cacio e pepe stuffed rolls. Oh. So there's like ricotta, mozzarella, parmesan, and loads of black pepper in these like bready roll things. Cheese stuffed garlic flatbreads. There's loads of savory in here. And then these spiced cheddar cornbread muffins, which I love. They were so good. I'm laughing because the person I gave them to said that they smelled like pepperoni, which I think was a compliment, but there was no pepperoni in there. But it's because there's quite a lot of like smoked paprika in here,
right? Okay, yeah.
So it just makes 6. I had like a silicon kind of ovally mold, where the molds, the individual portions are quite small, so I ended up making about 8. But it's not, yeah, again, it's not like a huge portion, so it's just butter, melted, plain flour, cornmeal, caster sugar, only 50 grams, so not a huge amount, baking powder, English mustard powder, and smoked paprika, which kind of adds that kind of spiciness. Salt, eggs, buttermilk, and then grated strong cheddar cheese. And then to garnish it, you're meant to use pickled jalapeno chilies and dried chili flakes. I forgot to buy the pickled jalapeno chilies, so I just did the dried chili flakes. But it was, yeah, really, really easy. So you just grease your tin, dry ingredients together. You make a well in the center. You make a well in the center. And you put in your eggs. Center.
I wish.
You smell like pepperoni. Make a well in the center, pour in eggs, buttermilk, melted butter. You just stir that together, add in your cheese, and then you stir it together again, and then you just spoon it into the muffin tins. Great. You bake them, yeah, so that's when you garnish them with your jalapenos, if you remember to buy them, and then a pinch of chili flakes. And you just bake them for like 15 minutes. They bake so quickly. They rise up beautifully, like really nice and domed. And then I was just like dying to eat them, you know, when you're just like, you get them out of the oven and you're like, oh my God, I so want to taste these. He says that before he serves them, he brushes the top of the muffin with a little warmed honey and an extra sprinkle of cheddar. But it's optional. They were just really, really good. Because they're not too big, you can basically just eat them on their own. They don't really need to be, like, spread with anything.
Yeah.
Especially when they're warm. But, like, the next day, I just, like, split them open and, like, put, like, some butter on. Or you could, them, like, just savoury little bread rolls or whatever. They were delicious. They've got a kick from that paprika and from the mustard and the chilli, chili flakes on top, so they're just not like overly cheesy. That's just the cheese is just there in the background, and they were delicious.
Oh my God, I want this book now. They sound so good. I love cornbread, and I feel like I'm still chasing. Like there's I've had a couple of like amazing ones in my life. One from my American friend's mom who makes it. Shout out to Chris and Alexa. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then also, do you remember when like the Chilton Firehouse was a thing?
Yes.
They did a cornbread, these little cornbread madeleines. With like a honey butter. I feel like that is the cornbread high that I've always been trying to chase. And I'd always try and make it like, but they sound great with the jalapenos in.
They are really great. I think cornbread can often be a bit dry as well. I think it's quite nice when they're in that individual muffin shape because they just can't get that dry. He has like an olive oil and feta quick bread as well, where he's trying to like recreate, you know, his holiday in Crete, basically. It looks great. He's got like a pizza night for two recipe to just make like yeast pizzas. And it's a very, very smart concept. I love it. I love it. I love him. I love you.
I love you. We're just big Kimber fans.
Big Kimber. Big Kimber on campus. Sorry, I don't know where it's going. Brown butter salted maple tarts. Oh,
that sounds good. I'm buying this book maybe right now.
Okay.
I'm gonna go. But thanks.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for your time. I need to go and buy this book.
I'll buy the easy one. So I mean, needless to say, this is a fangirl episode, but we felt like we've mentioned him so many times on the podcast and we needed to give him his own episode. Ed deserves it.
You are. And my request, Ed, is a one tin bakes savory. It doesn't even have to be one tin, actually. Just a savory cookbook. Okay. That's my request
for
you.
Sorry, I'm not him.
I know, but I'm just. I'm sure he's listening. I'm sure he's also a fanboy of us, right? The fanboy who bakes. and so that focus group of one, me. More savory recipes.
It's always the thing, right? We always say this about most baking books, that we want more just savory.
Yeah.
Just more savory.
We're not going to rate today, no, by the way, because, I mean, obviously it's obvious.
Fives across the board.
Also, I think it's worth to say, based on our rating system, that pretty much, well, I think, well, in the One Tin Bakes books, every recipe has a picture.
Yeah.
So you know what it's supposed to look like.
That's true. And they're all by him. He does all his own photography.
Does he?
Yeah. This is on the back of One Tin Bakes. You can see it says photography by him, which is really impressive. He's because he does styling for other, for some, he does food styling as well on the side, he? I think. Does a little bit of everything.
What a guy.
Ed, we love you.
We love you, Ed. Thank you for all you do.
And listeners, lovely, lovely, lovely little listeners, thank you for putting up with our little summer easy sketch. And if you, we've been kind of trying a new couple of formats of the vintage cookbooks and the spotlight on like favourite cookbooks like Flavour and spotlight on Ed. So do let us know anything else you'd like to hear. We've got some fun plans, but we always like your suggestions.
We, I get, the next book we do will be Thomas Schreker's, and we'll get some white men to fill in for us.
This just in, actually, Vic. I feel like it with its due diligence that we have to. I have to. When I opened Instagram to look at Ed Kimber's page, I saw that Thomas Schreker has now owned his failure and posted a story as of 47 minutes ago saying, on Friday night, I put up a post of my chef team and many rightly pointed out the lack of diversity within it. I am very sorry for my initial response where some queried whether I take this issue seriously. I am absolutely committed to ensuring diversity in my restaurants. Unfortunately, we aren't achieving this in my kitchens currently, and this is an area I know I need to improve on. Making sure it is seen as a welcoming and approachable environment for all. So there, he's finally owned it.
Well done, Tom.
As requested. There you go.
So, we take it all back. We take it all back.
Does Kenji, though? That's the question.
Kenji should never. We love him.
Join us next time for the Diversity in Food Police.
Join us next time for hazelnut chicken recipes.
We love you.
We love you. Thank you. And bye. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review as it helps others to find us and enjoy us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle, where you can also get in touch with us, let us know your thoughts, feedback, ideas for episodes, whatever you like. We really love to hear from all of you. So we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.